Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Deborah.
I'm Coach Kelly.
Coach Kelly, you look beautiful today.
Oh, you're
not
so
that you
sweet.
Don't always, but some glow in your face. That's because your parents are here.
My parents are such
you're like
little
a little child.
It's like so sad, but like really funny. Yeah, my parents are here. They arrived about an hour ago. I haven't seen them yet, but they're coming. I cleaned my car. It was so you could feed like a small community like out of my car. I mean, it was so gross that like I had to clean it before people had entered it. So I cleaned the car.
Is that from Munchkin spillage?
Oh my God. They're animals. They're not even kids. They're like caveman. Oh, you know, like just shoving it in. It's like in every crevice. I didn't even know there were like crevices that like things could like tuck in, and it was just nasty. So clean my car. I'm all set. I'm ready to go.
Wonderful. So yeah. You go after the show, do you go to?
Yeah, so I'll go home and they'll be there. It's nice. Yeah.
Are they managing the little monster munchkins at
no,
this moment?
No, once I get home, I'll go with them to pick up the kids at camp. Yeah, my older one is like beyond excited. He's like doing cartwheels.
Oh, yay. But also you get to have a little time away with the hubby, too.
Yes. That's on Friday, exciting. We're going to take a little breather down to San Diego, which would be so nice.
Very nice. It's always so pretty there.
I know.
Okay, I heard something today that was just blew my mind. It was hysterical. Did you know that there is such a thing as National Cheesecake Week?
Yes, I did know that.
I did not know that.
I think you get like half off or something at Cheesecake this week. Is that what it is?
Yes, but National Cheesecake Week? Really? I mean, we haven't even covered all the major illnesses out there. Like, you know, they have cancer, breast cancer awareness month. I mean, shouldn't we do some of those first before we do cheesecake? Not, I mean, I try to stay away from cheesecake.
It's so good, though.
It's so good.
Oh, my God. I'm like, I'd be the first one there. I actually split one yesterday with my friend. She was in town, and we went to Earth Cafe, and it was like an Oreo cheesecake. It was divine. Like, there's something about those like rich desserts. Like, forget it. I don't even know if I ate my meal. I just had that first.
Wow. We had some friends come over and they were in charge of bringing dessert over the weekend.
Yeah.
He brought this thing. I swear it was so delicious. I mean,
what was it?
So amazing. It was like in this handmade like chocolate cup on the bottom. Then it had chocolate like mousse at the very bottom.
Oh,
then like a whipped cream center and raspberries all over the top with other creamy
Did
stuff
she make
on top.
It?
No, she got it at some special bakery and I don't remember the name of it now, but oh my decadent. Oh,
I know.
So
when
yummy.
People are like, desserts are too rich, I'm like, I don't even know what that means. Like, that doesn't even compute
too
to
rich
me.
For what?
Yeah,
right?
Like,
just eat them.
Yeah, exactly.
You remind me of somebody who probably has, I don't think I've ever seen you eat dessert, but I can imagine when you eat dessert, you eat it with gusto
and like,
pleasure.
Exactly.
Total decadence.
You know what? It's
indulgence.
Funny. I'm like, my husband loves like the pure sugar. Like, he'll take those Pixie sticks, take them off, and like down them. Like, he's like the candy sort of like Mike and Ike's. Like, and I don't like that. Like, that to me does not appeal. It's more of like the gooey, like chocolate chip cookies, brownies, like homemade, like that I like.
Yeah. I like the rich, creamy things.
Me too.
Oh, I really love lemon meringue pie.
Oh, you do?
I
See,
do.
I could do without.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
funny
like
how everybody has their like
everybody
thing.
Has their thing, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, if you would like to give us a call, please, we love your calls at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. And you can always send us those wonderful emails. Keep those coming. Oh my gosh, last week that was such a great author,
that was
The Loneliness Cure.
Incredible. I'm still like paging through the book, like going back and reading it again. It's fantastic.
I keep thinking if I have like a handful of clients that I want to get copies for and just have them read it because that's such a huge thing that people talk about constantly.
So it's called The Loneliness Cure, and it was by author Corey Floyd, who's a PhD, and he studied basically different cultures, how they're what he terms like affection deprived, and so you know, it's a whole science behind it. Who's, you know, is it race? Is it, you know, socioeconomic status? And he did all the research behind it. So it's really, really, really interesting.
Yeah, he's very articulate, too.
Yes.
Yeah, he seemed really comfortable in front of the microphone. He's not a clinician, though.
No.
Just a researcher. Not just.
Yeah. He
is a
researcher.
Yes. And anyway, so that was awesome.
Yeah.
So any other stories to tell before we introduce our next? guest?
You know, I've had like three people come in from Maryland, like literally staggered in the last 3 days. So funny. I had a girl who used to live out, is from Maryland, used to live out here kind of at the same time I was, just recently moved back. She was here for work, so we hung out. Then I had another friend who's renting a beach house in Malibu, so I spent the day with her and my older one. It was awesome. And then this other girl from Maryland just came out and slept over. So it's like, it's been so much fun. And you know when visitors come, you kind of like feel more connected to to the city. Like I got really excited about kind of showing them around. And so I've had a lot of fun. I needed it. It was good.
Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. And our guest today is an Eastern gal. Okay. So without further ado, shall we just dive in?
Yes.
Today's guest is author Carrie Hannon, and she's the author of Love Your Job, The New Rules for Career Happiness. She's an award-winning author of this book, as we just said, and Fortune 500. I think she's going to tell us a little bit more about herself, too. She's a columnist for the New York Times, PBS Next Avenue, and ARP. She's a contributing writer at Forbes and Money, and she has spent 25-plus years covering all aspects of personal finance for leading media companies, including USA Today, Wall Street Journal. Wow, this is very exciting. Yeah. Welcome, Carrie.
Hi, great to be here. Thanks for inviting me to be on your show today.
Yeah. Well, this is cool because Carrie and I actually share the same literary agent, and that's how Carrie found us. So
we're literary sisters.
Literary sisters, absolutely.
Yes, we love her. But I have to tell you guys, you ladies, that when you were talking about those desserts, I was getting really hungry, and my favorite is key lime pie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's good stuff, too.
That's so funny.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, I know sometimes when people just talk about foods like that, I just start salivating more.
Well, it's so funny. I love playing the game. Like, it's called, like I call it crunchy or creamy. So, like, you know, you say to somebody, like, do you like crunchy peanut butter or creamy? And, like, people are very, like, serious about their likes. Like, oh, crunchy. You like creamy? Ew.
Yeah, ew.
You know, like, so I play this game, you know, all that. I love games. So we could do that one day. We'll have a show on likes and dislikes.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so this is so cool. Love Your Job. So many people out there in this country and other countries that can't stand their jobs. So
I know.
Enlighten us. How are we going to love my job?
Here's the thing. I spend a lot of time going around the country talking to audiences of workers, people over 50, primarily, who really want to work, right? I look out and I see this palpable fear in their eyes that they're going to outlive their money. And they've, you know, been downsized or taken an early retirement package, whatever, and they want to get back in the workplace. But even though the economy has improved, it's really tough when you're over 50 to find a job. It just takes a while. So I would come home from these speaking engagements and I would run into people who would just be complaining and complaining about their jobs. And I was like, stop it, you know, just cut it out, you know.
Yeah.
If you don't love your job, find a way to find joy in it somehow. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you can't get up every morning and be miserable. You've got to find a way to enjoy what you're doing in your life. It's your life. If you hate the job, then go slow. Take your time. It's going to take you a while probably to find another job. So be happy in the meantime.
And how does one do that? Let's say somebody goes to a job they've been to for maybe 20 years. It's like maybe it's a career, but they're just tired of it. They're bored. And what do they do? How do they start making that a better experience?
I think you absolutely nailed it, because a lot of times people say they hate their job, but what it really is that they're bored with their job.
Right.
They don't recognize it as boredom, but that's really at the core of it. So there's a lot of ways you can sort of tackle that. And in my book, Love Your Job, I go through various exercises that you might do each day, you know, sort of trying to dig down to find out what is it that you originally loved about your job, what is it that is bothering you right now about it, just trying to kind of peel back the layers to find out what is it. But on the simplest level, if you want to just talk about, I'll just start with one easy tip, okay? It sounds simplistic. Mm-hmm. Declutter your office.
Mm-hmm.
Just take a minute and start going to, if you have a messy office or whatever, when we start to declutter things around us, you're making decisions about your life. You're saying, I value this, I don't value this. It's at the core of it, it allows you to step back and start making these decisions. And it's incredibly liberating.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That makes sense.
I was going to say, too, even like at my my home office, when I have papers that have just not been filed, and I just like pile them up and I look at it, then I don't even want to go into the room. And then I just pause and say, okay, it's just
empowering. It's energizing to do. And people laugh about it. They're like, oh, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, try it. Yes. It helps.
Exactly.
Well, Kelly was just sharing that you did that with your car.
Exactly. But I also did my desk, which is really fun. I did do my desk, and I know exactly what you're saying. But I guess my question is, so what if people are, that's not really their passion. They're in a job because it literally, they're getting a paycheck, but they really want to do something. So like, let's say you have somebody who's, you know, making decent money in finance, but really wants to be, you know, wants to be a musician. What's your suggestions on that front?
Yeah, I just love that topic. Actually, the book I wrote before this was called What's Next? Follow Your Passion and Find Your Dream Job. Yeah. And I went around the country and interviewed all kinds of people that made big switches to do something they really loved.
Yeah.
And, you know, my best advice is absolutely, if it's something that's your passion you love to do, you can find a way to do it. But you can't do anything rash. You've got to take it slowly and build it up in baby steps and don't ruin that day job. Keep doing that. But slowly on the side, you can start building out that business as something that you've always wanted to do. I often find anyone who makes a big shift like that, you know, I interviewed a guy who went from the Navy to running away with the circus and being a company manager.
Awesome.
But it usually takes 3 to 5 years to really make a transition.
Okay.
So, because you've got to get the education, you've got to, you know, just ramp it up bit by bit. And if that guy who wants to become the musician probably needs to start saving a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you need to have, you're not going to make the kind of money you probably made in your current job or will make. So, at least initially, and when you make a career transition. So, you know, I encourage people to take the time and really get financially fit ahead of time so that they have that nimbleness to follow a dream that they, because debt is a huge dream killer, and if you can start paying down some of those debts, you know, downsize how you live, refinance your mortgage, whatever, all those kinds of things gives you the opportunity to follow some of those dreams.
Yeah, that makes sense.
On a side note, since you do so much with finances too, what do you think about the, what's that, the mortgage, the reverse mortgage? Is that a good idea for the elderly or not?
I tell you, you know, I'm not a big fan of it. So, you know, a lot of people might disagree with me, and obviously they do, but it's not something that I generally recommend.
Okay, that's good to know, because I know I just heard that advertised again today. I'm like, really? I wonder what that actually does. Is there a benefit to that? Or
well, I mean, it makes sense for somebody at a certain age, perhaps, who really is strapped for cash and doesn't have savings, and it's a way to draw the equity out of your home. But then what happens when that's gone?
Right.
You know, it can be really messy, and it's really hard to crystal ball how long we're going to live.
Right. That's true.
Absolutely. But what about that, you know, saying, like my father, he was one of those guys who taught me to save. I have been a really, really good saver in my life. And now I'm a little too afraid to spend, but I want to spend more because I want to really have fun now when I'm healthy and I'm active and I'm strong. Is there like do you have a balance formula for that or anything?
Well, I think you have to give yourself permission to enjoy your life. I mean, but I must say what having that discipline embedded in you early, you're going to really be thankful as you get older that you have that, because as I was saying about, you know, changing jobs and things, when you're financially secure, financially fit, it just does give you that financial freedom to follow things, to travel, to do the things you want to do. And as you get older, you can find a way to say, okay, yeah, but you know what you got to do? You absolutely have to run the numbers. Most people don't go to, say, a retirement calculator. I know that sounds really boring, but it's not hard to do. If you go to any of the major mutual fund companies, you know, Fidelity, T. Rowe Price, or even there's one called the Ballpark Estimate that I encourage people to look at. It's just a quick way to run some of your numbers and say, once you start looking at your budget and your numbers and what you might need to have saved to live in retirement, then you get a little more confident about saying, hey, I can spend to do this or do that, you know? I think that life is all about balancing, and you're right to be cautious, but, you know, I say live a little too.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. And if you'd like to give us a call, we're talking with Carrie Hannon, who's the author of Love Your Job, The New Rules for Career Happiness. Our phone number is 323-203-0815. Carrie, we got an email, and I'd love to know your opinion about this. It's struggles if you don't like your job because of the people that are there. And this is the email, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about this.
Oh, my gosh. See, it's so interesting. When I ask people what they love about their job, they often, you know, don't say it's the job itself, yeah. But they often do like the people they work with. When you don't like the people you work with, mm-hmm. that is so demoralizing because it's really, you just don't, it sucks the wind out of you. You don't want to go to work because there's so much negativity. And, you know, I really... it's a toughie, but you need to start, you know, trying to connect and reach out and find ways to, you know, here's one thing that helps. A lot of people don't realize that if you, you know, start celebrating somebody else's success, and instead of if you haven't had any great things happening in your job per se, but your colleague who maybe you're not so fond of, but your colleague has just gotten a nice promotion or a pat on the back or, you know, whatever, some project they did got a nice a recommendation or whatever, you know, send them a note of congratulations or say something, but be sincere about it. Because I find when you pay it forward that way and you right. actually reach out and celebrate someone else's success, it makes them feel good and it makes you feel good. And it you start to build this, you know, sort of nice collegiality within the workplace by really celebrating someone else and getting outside your own head. Another way to build camaraderie with colleagues who may drive you crazy is, you know, try to find a way if you can do something, you know, a volunteer project that your company might sponsor or something, that you can all get together to do, or find ways to connect that's not in the workspace, but you're working together on something that's for the better, you know, greater good of the world or something. It all brings good juju, and I think that's another opportunity, or, you know, forming a walking group at work where you can go out at lunchtime and, you know, try to find ways to connect with your colleagues away from those office walls, and then you learn more about each other, and you might find you spark some engagement that you weren't finding in sort of the closed walls of an office.
Yeah. And also just to add to that, because I wrote a book called Your Boss Is Not Your Mother, which sort of took a different angle mm-hmm. in the workplace about understanding how we sometimes take our childhood wounds and we project them yes. onto our coworkers, expecting our bosses and coworkers to be reparative in the yeah. wounds that were created in childhood. For example, if you have a boss who's hypercritical and you had a mother who was very critical, uh-huh. then every time you're engaged with this person, it reminds you of being that yeah. five-year-old who's, you know, being tormented by, you know, spilling the juice
exactly.
that, you know, does it on an accident, yeah. and then you start to have more childlike responses. So mm-hmm. I think that's a really important thing when people are having struggles in the workplace with other people, to take a look at some of their
yes.
background and what kinds of energies might be getting triggered by those people.
Sure. And what do you do?
Oh, I love that. That's really great. That's a really good one, Deborah.
Yeah.
So Dr. Deborah, so let's say that is the case. Your boss is hypercritical. You realize, you make the association, oh, that reminds me of my mother. What then?
Well, the thing I say is that grow up. I mean, this
right,
is
right,
not
right.
your
it's
mother,
just awareness.
Right? It's
yeah.
a way to say, okay, and I mean that in a gentle and loving
yeah.
way, but it's like, okay, you have to get over yourself about
right.
that. This
right.
is not your mother.
Right.
It's not your father. It's not your abusive brother. And
yeah.
find different ways to respond.
Uh-huh.
And how about you, Carrie? Do you have some input about that?
I think, Dr. Deborah, that's a great, you know, it's just terrific advice. And the only other thing I would add is that, you know, frankly, you're not going to change who your boss is. If that's the
yes.
person that's upsetting you in your workspace.
Mm-hmm.
And your boss, what you have to do is, like you said, get over it to a certain extent, but keep your side of the street clean. You know, do your job, do what's expected of you,
right.
and be eager, enthusiastic, and try to see it from their point of view, because that's the only, if you can learn to empathize with them to a certain degree, what their problems are, what they're facing, their stresses, you might be able to find a better point of working together.
Sure.
Yeah, I have a funny story about a workplace experience that I had when I was in, I think it was just out of graduate school, and it was like my postdoc, and was
uh-huh.
working at an agency that was in in San Fernando Valley area, and it was for kids and who had been removed from homes, et cetera. And there were several therapists who would work with a small group of, intensely with a small group of the kids. So I had six boys who were under my watch, basically. And I worked with this guy named Bill. He was awesome. He was amazing. But the administration was horrible, as Kelly would say, horrible. And so I would go to work. And one time we could overhear one of their administrative meetings, right? I walked by and I heard my boss say, therapists are like potted plants. You can just move them from one room to the next.
Oh,
is that awful? As if our role was so insignificant to these children that it was just terrible. It was so demoralizing. So I stayed there for a couple more months, and then I found another job.
You were a potted plant and went somewhere else.
I was a potted plant, I planted myself elsewhere. But I'm sure you've heard stories like that too, Carrie, yes?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's always, you know, those sort of work situations. But, you know, when we were back, when we were talking a little bit about what can make people love their jobs and when you're just dreading Monday morning and stuff, another thing I think is really helpful for people to consider is, you know, make just one small change. You know, if you can think of, when we were talking about boredom at least at the beginning of the show, if you can take a single step towards sort of modifying what's getting you down, and one great way to do that is to sign up for some sort of continuing education or a professional development program that's offered by your employer, or even if you can't find something at your employer's, you could take a pottery class if you have to, but something, when you acquire knowledge, you sort of start to notice the world around you, and your mind turns on, and you sort of, you know, you start to recharge, and I think when we think about a workplace education, it's really your responsibility to stay, you know, to remain relevant in your work. And if, you know, so I really think it's important for people to think about learning something in order to sort of ramp up those brain cells and the energy about working. And there's lots of other ways we can do this. You can even sit on lectures at a community center or a library. But anything that kind of gets you going again and learning, I think often is a great way to get recharged about, you know, the world around you and your work.
I
like that, because I think also it makes you more confident. And I think a lot of people are unhappy at work because they don't feel very good about themselves. They don't feel like they're contributing something in a meaningful way. So I think when you can do anything that's a confidence booster, it really can help your own internal morale.
And sparks.
I think that's been, it's so true. And then you never know where you're going to get a new idea that's going to maybe spark you to sort of make a change in your work life or to move in a new direction. I mean, you can't really plan for that. It's sort of, you know, kismet. But if you kind of put yourself out there and you're open to learning and open to new ideas, it sounds new agey, but I swear it works.
You believe it.
No, I think that's good too, because getting out there and networking with new people, that you can have different opportunities right at your doorstep. I mean, I tell people too, like, go join your local chamber of commerce, do something where you can get in front of other people, do some speaking, do some other things, so people get to know you in a different capacity. Also,
it's really smart
to open
doors. I love that idea. So the speaking thing is so fantastic, because on almost any kind of job, and many jobs, if you kind of ramp up that your public speaking skills, it can translate to lots of different things. It doesn't mean you're always out giving presentations, but it does really give you confidence about who you are and how you present yourself.
Kelly, have you ever been in a job that you absolutely hated?
My God, where do I start? I mean, yes, but I think for me, a lot of it was, you know, just certain people were, I found difficult to work with, and it was hard because that was tough for me. I'm trying to think what else. But then there were a lot of jobs that I really liked. I worked at a couple of radio stations that I really liked. I liked some of the creative jobs, but I do feel for people who really hate their job, because it's an everyday thing. They got to get up in the morning, and it would just be hard to live like that. So I really think this is great, Carrie, that you're giving people insight and kind of how to really love their job again and you know, to make themselves a little bit happier.
You know, and another great way to do it, just sort of thinking, you know, sort of riffing off of this idea is what you two were speaking about, is, you know, think of it, these are internal changes that you can make. Those are the easiest ones we can make. We can't change our boss or our colleagues, but we can change how we approach them and how we feel inside. And one great way to do that is to think of yourself as an entrepreneur. It's your own business. You're a small, me, Inc. It's all about, so you're running your own shop, and it just gives you this idea, and your employer is your main client, but it gives you this sense of autonomy and a little, you know, often you feel powerless in your job, but when you can turn it around to think is, I am running my own small business, and this is who I choose to have as my primary client. If that kind of changes the way you view things, and then if we go back to our musician, the guy who wants to become a musician, this is the way that you can start sort of build out some little platforms on the side that you start thinking, yeah, this is my primary job, but I do this and I do this. So your job doesn't totally, your day-to-day job doesn't totally identify who you are and your sense of self-worth.
Yeah,
I like that a lot. Yeah, that's a really, really good way to approach it. I'm going to use that. I hope you don't mind.
Not at all. Yeah.
I'm going to use that with my clients.
But it's really true. I mean, even any job I've ever had, I work for myself now, but for years I worked in-house for different publishers. And, you know, I always did outside work. I always freelanced on the side. I just had this sense that I didn't want to be, you know, indebted to just one paycheck. And all of those contacts, all that networking I did over the years, when I did go full-time on my own, I had all those in my basket to call on.
Smart. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I think that's really smart. You also talk about your hover method, and I'd love to learn more about that.
Well, hover is just kind of, it's an acronym that I love to sort of throw out to people to get their brains thinking about what can you, again, do to make changes in how you view your work life. And hover stands for, it sort of symbolizes, you know, if you think of your hovering over, so, you know, you jump up there and look down at yourself and say, okay, here are some of these ingredients that I really need to have inside to move forward with making my work life happier. And the first one, you know, H for in hover, the H stands for hope, you know, and so it's sort of, hope is something that's incredibly vital. And if you've talked to enough people who are down on their work, they're really not filled with hope. So you need to believe you can reach your goals. You need to find a way to do so. And so you need to work on sort of developing this psychological muscle that lets you feel hope again. And O stands for optimism. And that's, I find that people who are optimistic and sort of have an upbeat view of their work, they are more likely to succeed. They just have this sort of core factor that they're able to kind of, you know, fight back and take action. So if you can work on being more optimistic, to see possibilities and solutions to problems, don't dwell on the negative part. Really think about, okay, well, what's the can-do approach here? How can I solve this? And I think you'll bounce back quicker from rejection if you can work on that muscle. The V is value. I mean, it's that inner confidence we were just talking about, to know that, you know, if you do your best work, that, you know, that if you value your own work and your own skills and talents, that other people are going to believe in you. It's sort of this inner compass. But when you know that what you're doing has value, it's very subtle, but those around you will sense it. They'll feed off of that. And it's a really great way to sort of, you know, get more involved in yourself. And again, that value part goes back to what we were talking about, educating, you know, education, continuing to learn, lifelong learning. That's all about adding value to who you are. And, you know, it's almost like when you, if you think of yourself as your own business, it's adding products to your line. Enthusiasm is the E in hover. And enthusiasm is like, get up and go. You know, when you're enthusiastic, people want to be around you and they want to work with you. They want you on their team. And also, it's very invigorating for yourself. So I think that's something to work on, sort of, you know, try to be eager about trying new assignments. A boss may be a really, you know, difficult boss, but when you're eager and enthusiastic, and I don't mean being a sycophant about stuff, but when you're really, you know, honestly eager about stuff, they get that. They want that. They want you on your team because you make them look good. And finally, it's resilience, and that's sort of the catch-all, because when you're resilient, you sort of have this knack to, you bounce back when things go wrong, and that's really a difficult thing for people to work on, but you've got to resist that urge to not get bogged down in sort of office gossip and negativity when a project doesn't go right for you, when your boss is a jerk. I mean, you've got to find a way to look towards the future, to be curious, to keep learning. But you can really, I honestly believe, and I hope, Dr. Deborah, I think you do too, and Kelly, that, you know, if you can teach yourself to be resilient, if you just keep focusing on not doing things the old way, of always moving forward to try new things.
Absolutely. Sure. Resiliency is just key to everything in life, I think. Hang on one sec. If you just joined us, you are listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, and we would love to have your phone calls because we have a great guest on today, Carrie Hannon, who's talking about her book, Love Your Job, The New Rules for Career Happiness. So if you'd like to give us a call at 323-203-0815. Also, Carrie, we have a great email we want to read out loud and have you chime in. You ready?
Yep, go for it.
All right. Dear Doc and Coach, I don't really love my job, and I have an opportunity to join a new company. The kicker is that my wife and I are about to have our second baby, and new job generally means a step up in hours in order to prove yourself out of the gate. So I'm afraid to miss out on this new opportunity, but I simply don't think I'll have the time to put into it early on, given the situation at home. What would you do?
It's a tough
big
one.
Big question.
Yeah.
Carrie, you got some?
I would take the jump.
Okay.
I wouldn't think twice. I mean, think about in the long run, that period of time where you're feeling like you need to be part of working, you know, the child rearing in those early stages, and yes, that's critical and important, but in the long term, financial security and career security, and I mean, I really think you can find a way to, if you're, you know, straightforward and if you're good with time management, there are ways you can make it work for you. I think giving up an opportunity like that at this stage in your career is really, I don't really think it's the best thing. I think a lot of people are afraid to raise their hand and ask for new duties or, you know, taking on a new job like that because they're afraid to stretch. They're afraid that they might fail. Like your listener just said, you know, they're afraid that they won't do the job properly. And, you know, I think that it's really important to throw your name into the hat and give it a go.
I think that's a really good piece of advice. Yeah, I actually agree with that. I feel like I think you have nothing to lose. I mean, you know, and I think people are actually pretty understanding if you have a new baby. You know, they kind of know that, okay, hey, you know what, she just had a baby, give up a little bit of slack. And then after the baby, after you get in the swing of things, you kind of build yourself up and you prove yourself then.
Yeah. Well, also on a positive note about that, too, yes, of course, fear is something that always makes people make sometimes not good decisions. But it could be that there's better pay at this job, and then he can afford to get a little bit of extra help.
That's a good
around
point.
The house so that there might be some flexibility.
Excellent. Yeah, yes, great point.
In both situations, right? So maybe when the next baby and the other child is a little bit older, they'll have a lot more resources to be able to have more fun.
Yeah,
do more
I think
things.
That's a really good piece of
advice.
Yeah, lift your eyes up from the very present and look beyond a little bit. I think that's great advice. Yep.
Yeah, it's tough.
But again, you know, back to that point that we were just that I was just saying that, you know, in terms of him accepting a new job, I think that people, this is a mistake or something, a tip I often give people who really are bogged down and unhappy at work is to really, you know, dissect their job and say, look for a new responsibility that they could, you know, that will kind of refresh their focus or, and maybe even scare them a little bit. It's okay to be nervous.
Yes.
I think it's really important if you can sort of, you know, give yourself permission to stretch to a harder assignment, raise your hand and volunteer to say yes to a new assignment, even if you're worried that you're not up to it or what have you, if they've come to you with that. Because I think that adrenaline will kind of charge you up.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I think it would be fun.
Your dog's charged up.
I'm sorry.
Your dog has a lot to say on this issue.
I think it would be great if we could also talk a little bit about what I would call the chronic complainer.
Oh.
The person who basically, they're going to complain no matter where they are. Because they just,
I know.
You know,
yeah.
And they're very frustrated.
And they just bring everybody else down with them.
Yes.
You know, just like stop whining, you know, get over it.
Right. I mean, the one who walks into the workplace and you hear all about their sad stories from home, their woes at home, and then everybody's rotten at the job. You know, this one doesn't do this, and this one doesn't do this. And people like that, sometimes you offer them really great suggestions, like all these suggestions, Carrie, that you're offering.
Right.
You have good suggestions, et cetera. And then they just, like, push away as if you didn't even – it's like a help seeker rejector. Oh, give me some help. Well, here it is. Well, I don't want it.
Because they like being the victim.
Yeah, the victim.
You know, you just got it's those are people who are toxic. I mean, that's just and don't let it rub off on you. I mean, that's really tough. You know, I was laughing when my dog was just barking. You too. This I have a yellow Labrador Retriever who is like my road manager. And the introduction to my book Love Your Job is all about her, all about Zena. It's everything I need to know about loving my job I learned from my dog. So if anyone picks up the book, they can learn all about Zena.
That's so beautiful. Well, yeah, you know, Kelly is like, she talks about her job having, her dog having come out of her vagina.
And I'm not kidding. Like, literally, like, I was telling Dr. Deborah, I was creating a family tree the other day on Ancestry.com, and I said to my husband, is it weird that I want to put Moose, like, as my firstborn son? Like, and I'm serious about it. And ironically, this is really funny, I have a cousin who said, oh, you know, I was creating, you know, a family tree, and I put Moose on there for you. And I was like, oh my God, that's what I was thinking. It was really funny.
That is so cute.
Independently.
I love dogs too, but I have mostly had cats.
So, right.
Yeah.
All right. Cat lady. I'm a cat lady.
And they, some friends came in from San Diego this weekend who we had seen the weekend before, but they were driving up for their vacation up in Pismo Beach. So they bought their two little puppies. The one puppy, Oliver, who's like, I don't know, he's like 3 pounds maybe.
So
and the other one, Coco Bella, who's about 6 pounds maybe. And they're so cute. But the cats, they did like a full frontal charge up against, we had them in the backyard. The cats came running up to the glass, and they do a full frontal charge. They get so upset when there are other.
Well, of course, it's their territory.
Who are these invaders?
I think
Zena's more worried about cats than cats are about her.
She sounds so sweet.
Oh, and labs are wonderful. My daughter has a lab. They're so special.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's just. I mean, that's what, you know, one of the things I talk to people a lot about in terms of. Of their work life is like getting, you know, I mentioned you guys financial. It's like my fitness plan. I'm talking about being financially fit. Mm-hmm. But one thing is being physically fit, and having my dog makes me get out of the house and go for a walk.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a great way to get out and move. And, you know, so I just, you know, some people don't want to do a big workout regime. I'm like, get a dog, go for a walk. Borrow your neighbor's dog.
Well, I can apply this to the office because I've noticed that just getting that fresh air, going on a half hour walk, your lunch break can make you feel so much better. It can make you less tired, and B, I think it gives you, you know, that something about the sun, and it just gives you those endorphins. You feel better coming back in. It's hard to be in an office all day. So
it's
I'm all
so
about
true.
That.
It just changes your whole focus. It's wonderful.
You know, one of my favorite jobs that I ever had, I keep swearing I would go back to this, was the service industry. I loved waitressing.
Yeah. Me too.
It was so much fun. You meet so many different people.
You're
always
your
on the move.
Yes. Yeah. It's fast. Well, I think that's why we both liked it too, because it wasn't boring. It's like, you know, you're just, but I remember having nightmares. Like, I would literally wake up in the middle of the night and be like, potato salad. Like, you know, because it's like, you're always thinking about like people's orders, and you have like 5-6 tables. You're like, oh. So I do remember that, but I liked it too.
Yeah. I worked at this one restaurant where they had a late night thing. Like, there was a nightclub that was nearby. So afterwards, people would come. So they would serve dinner until like 3:30 in the morning. So those were my shifts. I would work like 7 until 3:30. Uh-huh. And I would have 14 tables all by myself.
Oh my
and it was the
God.
Kind of restaurant where you actually had to get, it was a Middle Eastern place. So they had like shish kebabs and things. We had to get the stuff out of the refrigerator for the cook. And bus our own tables.
Me?
And it was like, it was always a challenge just to see if I could make it to the end of the night, you know, without tripping over somebody or dropping everything. Because it was very high pace.
Wow.
But I loved it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's cool.
It was fun. Yeah.
So if you just tuned in, you're listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. Our phone number is 323-203-0815. Today, we are talking with Carrie Hannon. She's the author of Love Your Job, The New Rules for Career Happiness.
We have another email. I think this would be a great one. Carrie, are you up for it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here we go. Dear Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, I got into a heated debate with someone at work on a conference call. I was direct and assertive, but I don't think I crossed any line of professionalism. Regardless, the other person believes I went too far. Now things are awkward between us, and we need to work together. this is probably a very, very common
Common, yes.
Yeah, I mean, telephone is so hard. And well, it's better than emails, right? How many emails get misinterpreted?
Very true.
And that can cause a lot of problems. So you got to have a face-to-face with the person. I mean, you got to find a way to sit down and say, I'm feeling, just be honest, I'm feeling awkward. Is there something we need to talk about? Was there some miscommunication? I mean, Dr. Deborah, you probably have a better sense of this, but that, my gut is that you got to just step up and have that talk.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that the more people can get real about what the real experience is in front of them and deal with that, the better than dancing around it.
Pretending it didn't exist. Yeah.
So just, I agree, sitting down face-to-face, but actually just like owning it. I think if this person would say, you know what, I think I may have crossed the line, or I'm sensing that I said something that maybe offended you, or not, make it as much of an I statement as possible, as opposed to a we're awkward, or, you know, try to take some ownership initially. That sometimes opens up the door. Now, I will retract that if, in fact, this other person, however, is super entitled. Because if you claim too much responsibility with somebody else who's very entitled, they usually use it against you.
Oh, that's so tough.
Which is really tough.
That's very hard.
Yeah, you got to know. You know, one thing I was thinking about when we were talking about, this is digressing a little bit, but taking that walk at lunchtime. One thing I often tell people who are bogged down, you know, at work in their specific job or the people they work with, is to try to find joy around the edges of your job. And, you know, say, like, if you have a you know, if your interests are more physical, right, you could maybe join or organize a company team sport, you know, softball or kickball or even bowling, or, you know, create a walking or a biking or a running group with coworkers. And you might find that that coworker that's really stiff and miserable in the office, when you get them outside in the fresh air and moving, that all of a sudden you start, you build this camaraderie and they start laughing and you see a whole different part of them. And you learn to sort of love going to work for different reasons. And I have some friends who have started a musical group with their coworkers, where they go around to nursing homes and hospices and play gigs for free. And it's just really cool because they're doing what they love. They're exploring their creativity and their musical stuff. They found this bond that they, you know, certainly outside of the workplace, but now they work better together. You know, they sort of have this different level of a relationship.
I absolutely love that. I think that is fantastic advice and so true.
I agree. Yeah. As you were saying that, it had a little one of those light bulbs in my head. Why not something just so simple? If you're having some conflicts at work, I mean, people, like we were talking about desserts at the beginning of this, why not bake some cookies or some brownies?
I know, I would like somebody who brought in that key lime pie.
Yeah, but right. I mean, it's a sort of a waving your hand of a sign of nurturance, like, oh,
like
I'm a
peace,
nurturing person.
A peace gift.
I
love that idea.
Okay.
Okay. You know, I would eat them.
I'm going to make cookies next week.
Yeah, exactly. So cute.
You know, it's kind of, this is that I read today, this is a little bit different. One thing I find that people make some love their job, even if they don't like, you know, as I said, the specific thing they're doing every day, is that they take this pride in what they do. They have this sort of, it's ownership of their own work, but they find a way that they really identify with their company's mission, and that makes a lot of difference to them. And today, there was a new Gallup survey that came out that said about a third of the U.S. workforce strongly agrees that the mission or purpose of their company makes them feel their job is important. And I think that's really very interesting, you know. And mostly it's often in the hospitality industry that employees strongly agree that I know what my company stands for and what makes our brand different from competitors. So I think if you can find a way to get a job where you actually love the mission, and it doesn't have to be a nonprofit, but whether your company makes a product or does a service that really, you know, is doing something for the world around us, it's amazing how that can make your job, even if you think you're not getting paid enough or you're working too many hours, you take this pride in what your company stands for.
Yes, and I think probably one of the hardest jobs on the planet for people is if they're in sales and they have to sell something that they don't believe in.
I could never do it. You know what's funny? So I'm a big naturalist, and I remember my mom used to say to me, you'd be so good at pharmaceutical sales. And I'm like, if it was like a natural health product, I would be great. But like, it's hard for me to, I couldn't do it. Like, I'm amazed when people do that, because I think I don't know how it could come off anything but authentic if you don't believe in it. But some people, I guess, are good at that.
And it's a hard quandary. quandary for people, especially in the job market crash a couple years ago, or uh-huh. I guess more than a couple years ago, and it's been so hard for people to recover. But that was one of the only jobs that people, if you didn't have background experience,
yeah.
people would give you a chance at it, and then, you know, it's commission only. But
yeah.
what a tough thing to have
I know,
to do, right?
To, yeah.
I wouldn't be able to do that yep. either.
Mm-hmm. Very tough.
Any recommendations on something like that, Carrie? Like if somebody, you know, really all they know how to do is sales and some opportunity shows up for them mm-hmm. and they have to sell, like to keep the family afloat, something they don't like, would you say they should do it or keep on looking or?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think if you need the money, you know, take the job. Take the job and then start work. You know, you don't have to, no one says just because you took a job, you can't keep looking. Don't right. be obvious about it. But
right.
but definitely, you know, it's all about taking care of yourself. And if you need the money, that's got to, you've got to think of that first. Then you say, okay, I'm doing this, but I'm building out, I'm taking my time, and I'm really going to work to find what it is I really do want to do. And you can do that. But if you're worried about the money, I always say, you know, a bird in hand is better. People like to hire people that have jobs.
Right.
Right.
That's a good point.
That's true. What do you think is the longest or the shortest period of time that somebody could work at that fill-in job before they find another one where it doesn't look bad for them to leave a job?
I've done 6 months.
Yeah. 6 months?
Yeah. I've never done less than 6 months, but that was a hard 6 months.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very tough.
I think also there is that. I mean, if you have that once on your resume where you only work someplace for a really
yes.
short period of time, you could explain it. But there's
yes.
some people who go, all right, I'll
otherwise,
take that job.
A year. You need yeah. at least a year. I don't even put the 6 month one on my resume unless it's really relevant.
Right.
I you
right.
know, it, yeah. it just, I, you know,
yeah.
but it helped me get to the job I really wanted.
Yeah,
that's
good.
True.
Good.
Exactly. Stepping stone.
Do you have any resources for people? I know a lot of people are struggling with their resumes and this whole online application issues and the search words and things that people need to put in their resumes. Is there like some resource that helps people in their different industries know how to craft a resume so that they're being picked up, let's say, on the LinkedIn or on some other...
oh, I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm
yeah.
saying? Because apparently there's some of the... technology just rules out certain resumes if it doesn't have keywords in it.
Oh, interesting.
Do you know anything?
Well, you have to pay such careful attention
uh-huh.
to the actual words that are used in the posting. Don't try to be funny, creative, nothing. They want to stay their computer that what they're going to read is precisely that, right?
Okay.
And so there's lots of way. I mean, you need to make sure that you sprinkle those keywords throughout what you do, because that will, if you're not using those, if you're calling yourself something other, you know, the job than what the title of what they're looking for is. And I think that it's really critical. I've written some columns on that idea, and I think do a search because there's some good things out there. I have a new book that will be out at the end of September on job hunting
cool.
for workers
okay.
over 50 that has, I have a big chapter all on sort of how to really deal with those I hate online. Particularly
yeah.
when you have to apply online, because there's just the best way to get a job today is not by doing those online applications, although most people make you do it. But the way people get hired today is you get hired, employers want to hire people they know or people they know. Nothing has changed. It's always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about networking. The actual corporate policy might be that you have to send one of those resumes online,
mm-hmm.
but really, you know, have that paper resume sharp, have your LinkedIn profile. That is critical. It's sort of non-negotiable these days.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's knowing people that's going to get you in the door. It's not that stupid online thing. 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a black hole.
Probably 990 times out of...
Yeah, exactly.
999 out of 1,000, yeah.
I hate them.
Well, Carrie, we're going to have to close off here. Our show is over in just
Thank
a couple
so
minutes.
Much.
So how do people find you?
It's Carrie, K-E-R-R-Y, Hannon, H-A-N-N-O-N. So CarrieHannon.com is my website,
okay.
and my Twitter handle is @CarrieHannon. So that's fairly simple, and I'd love to hear from anyone if you have any follow-up thoughts, or you can send them through Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, and I'd love to answer them.
Thank
wonderful,
you so much.
Wonderful.
You're a wonderful guest, and you know, we loved your book, so thank
yes.
you so much.
Thank you, too. Love being on your show.
The book, again, is Love Your Job, The New Rules for Career Happiness by Carrie Hannon. Okay, and we want you on for the next book.
Yes, she's gone, but...
Okay,
yeah.
Wonderful. Yay, okay. And so, next yeah. week, we have...
Yes. So we have a personal family friend of mine who's an amazing sex therapist. His name is Dr. Dan Politz, and he talks about mindful sex, and he's... really, really, he knows a lot about porn addiction also. So we can ask all those type of interesting questions. And, you know, he's done a lot of research on that. So it'll be really, really interesting.
Yeah, that's such a big issue today.
Oh my God. You know,
just huge.
Huge.
Oh,
and young kids too. He was telling me, I had a conversation with him about it. I mean, little kids.
So accessible.
Yes. Yeah. Like 14-year-olds, you know, who are addicted. So
I hope he can talk to us about the stuff that I try to teach people about what it does in the brain. And he probably has a lot more interesting facts about that. So
sure.
We'd love to go there. All right. So exciting. Well, that's the end of our show for today. Yay. Kelly, where can they find you?
You can find me at kellymiller.com, KellyMiller.com. I'm getting a new website soon. I'm so excited. But in the meantime, you can also find my book, Professor Kelly's Guide to Finding a Husband, on Amazon.
Okay.
And how about you?
DrDebraOnline.com, DrDebraOnline.com. I've got lots of books and CDs and blogging, and it's fun. And I'll miss you till next week. But we will be back.
Sounds good. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.